Talk, talk to me. WSRadio.com. Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, it is another week of Comics Talk Comedy and another week that Jesse Egan is not here. He has to do some things at work, but our guest is here. I want to welcome in Jordan Parker. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
No problem. You want to be a little closer to the mic, but there you go.
First time in a radio studio.
How do you think? What do you think about it?
Well, I like that no one can see me. That helps. I didn't have to shave today.
Yeah, that's important. You got experience with the random running water?
Yes, I did. That was a little odd. I'm glad I didn't get water from it. Apparently it runs when the bathroom's on, so a little scared.
Yeah, well, here you are. So how was your week? Did you do any comedy at all?
I did. I did some New Year's comedy at one of my favorite spots, Shooters in Spring Valley.
Okay.
I really like that spot because, really, I don't feel any judgment at all because, you know, people who are there on New Year's Day, and I have a good time.
Yeah.
What can I say? It's where I started to cut my chops here in San Diego.
And okay.
All the nice comedians who, so you could say welcomed me into their little group.
It's a big group now.
It's gotten pretty big. It's gotten pretty big.
You go to Shooters almost every week?
I try to, yeah. It's been the place where I can test my comedy without, you know, feeling like it's a safe place, you know? I feel like it's really lets you test the limits of, you know, what's too far and what's actually a good joke. Because if it works there, it might work elsewhere.
Yeah, I've only been there one time. Do they normally get a crowd there?
Yeah, not everyone's there to see comedy. There's, you know, we've had to warn about drunks and the like getting involved in our shows and taking the mics and causing hilarity.
All right. So it's a safe environment, but it's a little scary.
Well, safe unless you get punched in the face, which I hear comes up on occasion.
You haven't been punched in the face, though?
Not there, no.
Okay. You've been punched in the face, though?
Not over comedy, but yes, I've been punched in the face.
How many times?
I'd say once. Well, wait, that doesn't count boxing when it was up by choice. But
right.
When I didn't want it, it was only once.
Okay.
That was high school, but I ended up winning that fight. So.
And how'd that happen?
Well, I had someone who was a best friend who suddenly decided to be an asshole, and I didn't realize it for quite some time. And 10 months later, I think he was mad, and it was almost like a West Side Story organizational, let's meet at the school grounds and throw fisticuffs. I had friends who we weren't really close, but I said, hey, this guy wants to fight. I don't know if you're busy. Absolutely. And we were united in our dislike of this singular person who he didn't bring male friends. He brought females to watch him in his glory, and it did not turn out like he liked. And it was beautiful. I'm not a fighting person, but
you don't come off like a fighter.
No, but actually, by coincidence, 10 months earlier, my brother had talked me out of accepting the Xbox from my parents and traded it in for a heavy bag. So it was really good coincidence.
All right.
I'd like to say it worked out well.
Are you still a boxer?
No, I am horribly out of shape. I got winded running to the bus, and I'm not very proud of that, except that I've told you about it, but I've resolved to start working out again. Doesn't mean I will, but I have resolved it, and I have told the internet it, so.
Well, you made a post or a tweet?
Oh my God, you're right. I have not Facebooked it yet, so it doesn't count.
Where did you put it?
Well, right here, and I told my dad. He checked in on me. He wanted to make sure that I'm getting healthy. You know,
okay.
Every time we talk, it's pretty much two topics. Are you working out yet? And are you getting any? Wait, I can say pussy, right?
Well, you just did.
I just did.
Your dad wants to know about that.
I'm not sure if he. You know, I don't know if he necessarily wants to know. I think it's just a segue to talk about, well, when I was a young man, let me tell you. And
okay.
It gets awkward because mom is still on the phone when he's doing this.
Okay. And is he a big fitness guy himself?
He's an elder dude, so to speak, but he doesn't look it. So yes, he works out about 2 hours a day, and
oh, wow.
He's a very, very commanding figure.
All right. You close to your parents?
Yes. Not geographically. They moved to Oklahoma.
Okay. So you grew up here?
No, actually, like most people, I'm not from here. I grew up in the Bay Area.
Okay. And what brought you down here?
Work. People who were willing to offer me a job. I actually, my brother, half-brother, is a lawyer down here, and he gave me my start at his firm, and we worked together for about a year.
Okay.
And I'm a lawyer in the daytime because I like not living with my parents, being a rare millennial out on my own.
Right.
I recently parted ways with him last amicably with his light push, and I started with a new place, and I really like it there, and it gives me a lot of freedom to do stuff like this. It's comedy.
All right. So how do you balance law and comedy?
I don't, and I'm going to try to get better at that. But I'd have to say that I make it an effort to go at least once or twice a week and try to get at least one show a month if I can.
Okay.
And if I'm not,
how do you go about getting on shows?
Being nice to people generally, and then occasionally I get offered. You know, I mean, somehow you've offered me a couple spots, and I've been always appreciative of that.
Yeah.
And Maria Herman, she's a great person. I love working with her, and she's given me a good couple shows with Comedy Heights, and I've done the comedy at the Comedy Palace and Twigs, and really just networking. Just try to be nice to people and not rub anyone the wrong way. And occasionally they may find you funny and give you a spot.
Okay. Is there anyone that rubs you the wrong way?
If there were, I wouldn't talk about it because I don't think that's a.
Well, you don't have to name names, but.
You know, it takes a lot to really rub me the wrong way, honestly. You know, if you're a nice, decent person, I will usually go out of my way to be nice to you back.
Okay.
Even if you're a dick to me, I will still find a way to keep peace. But, you know, it's almost like the big things, you know, the tragic human flaws, you know, that don't get to me. But if, you know, if you cut me off in traffic or, you know, do a really minor thing that I think you have a right to control, that's what really gets me upset. The people who don't know common decency, people who are rude on the internet, for example. I have
okay.
a real problem with people who are rude on the internet.
You're not a troller?
I'm a different kind of troll. I'm the kind of troll who would say, that's a logical fallacy. You are not factually supporting your argument. I get all lawyerly on the internet. Objection assumes facts not in evidence. Objection ad hominem, blah, blah, blah. You know, stuff that, you know, it sounds like I'm being a smug asshole. I don't mean to be, but that's just kind of how my mind works. And that's
in your mind is a smug asshole?
My mind is a smug, pretentious asshole, but deep down I'm very sweet.
Okay.
So
have you always been that way?
I guess so. I think a lot. You know, I was always the guy asking my parents what words mean, you know, and they'd say, why don't you look it up? I'd say, you're right, it wasn't important anyway.
Right.
But I've always been curious, and I very logical, you know. I don't react when people, you know, I'm not an angry person. It takes a lot to really push me that way. And I think that's kind of why comedy is really refreshing, because it's one of those few places I feel free to kind of cut loose and really.
Right. Because generally you're probably a very serious person.
I have to be. I'm very cautious. I've been very cautious, you know, with attorneys, you know, it's weird being balancing comedy and law because they're so opposite. I don't know if you heard about this last year. There was, sounds like a pitch for a comedy series, but there was a judge who was moonlighting as a stand-up comic, and he was forced to decide.
Oh, yeah, I think I heard about that.
Yeah, and he chose comedy. He chose comedy instead of being a judge, and power to him.
Well, he probably had a good amount of money already.
That's true. I have a lot of debt, which is negative money, so.
Okay. So you would choose law over comedy?
Oh, I've never been given that choice. I don't think I'm going to be, so I'll cross that bridge when I come to it.
But okay.
I like what I'm at now. I get to do both.
Right. What's a typical week for you?
Oh, gosh. I write a lot of letters, and I write a lot of motions, and then my boss signs his name on it. That's pretty much how my week goes.
What's a lawyer letter?
What's a lawyer what?
Letter.
A lawyer letter will be, in a very kind and non-aggressive way, explaining how everything you're saying is bullshit, and please stop, and this is why we don't have to pay your claim. I work for, I'm an insurance, I do insurance coverage primarily.
Okay.
And it's pretty dry, but it's, you know, it's not the evil kind of insurance. You know, I'm not helping people deciding if people live or die. I'm deciding whether a window contractor is covered as an additional insured. I mean, I can sleep at night doing what I do, and I love the people I work with.
Could you ever be a criminal attorney?
You know, my brother is a, he does title insurance, and he says one thing he could never do is defend a murderer. And in college, as sorry, law school, he actually did do that in with Gonzaga University. And I think you really underestimate what you're capable of when it's put before you. And that's not something he would do anymore. But I think really anyone is capable of doing anything if they wanted to. I don't know if I want to, but I think I could.
Right. Does that pay more than a regular attorney?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Just look at Mike Garagos and anybody who defends high-profile, truly terrible people, and truly terrible people have so much money.
Yeah. That's interesting. So so you're not driven that much by money?
No, not really. I live comfortably, but for what I do, I mean, I'm not rolling in it, but I don't have a set amount of money I need to achieve or things I need to have. I just want to be happy, and that's pretty much the life philosophy I'd like to try to live by.
And are you happy?
You know, I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty happy, and that's a surprise, but also pretty great.
Why a surprise?
Well, being a comedy is all about being depressed and internal, so it's nice to be in the place that I'm at. And actually, it's almost weird, like, when I catch myself with happy thoughts, like, what's going on here?
So you're almost uncomfortable being happy.
Oh, I'm Jewish, so we're not really comfortable with being happy, but
I don't know what that means, but hey, we're going to learn more about the Jewish culture when we come back. You're listening to WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. Be back in 3 minutes. You can call us at 866-797-2346, extension 1. Be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Second segment. So were you a fan of comedy growing up?
Yeah, I'd say so. Ever since I was 7 years old and saw George Carlin playing on loop at the Bally's Hotel, the advertising him, you know, all of the PC non-sweary stuff, like about euphemisms and cats.
Okay. Was it something that you thought you would do or just something you enjoyed?
It was something I enjoyed for a while. I never thought I would do it. I always loved comedy ever since I was a kid. I'd have to give credit to my dad for kind of pushing me to actually get off my ass and do it. He always thought that he was one of those parents who's pushing every single kid to follow your dreams, and yet somehow we all ended up being doctors and lawyers. So.
Okay. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have my brother Anton, and my dad was married before, and I have my half-brother David, and half-sister Janine.
And is Janine a lawyer or a doctor?
No, she's doing sustainable development in Bali right now. She serves on a consultant to a big green project. I could try to explain it, but I don't know how to.
You don't really know.
I don't really know.
But you guys all have adult jobs, it seems.
We have adult jobs, which is funny. My brother David was an actor, and my sister Janine, she was talented at singing and still is, all these guys. And my brother Anton wanted to save the world, and then all of us, like, you know what, we're just gonna go do our own things. And my dad's like, well, you know what, I'll be proud whatever you do. So it was nice. He was always very supportive of all of us, and yet somehow we all kind of ended up, you know, finding our own more rigid path.
Okay. Well, what got you on stage the first time?
Well, like all people, horrible trauma and heartbreak.
Breakup with a lady?
A breakup with a lady.
Okay.
A breakup with a lady. And I was living in New Orleans, and it was one of those breakups where they don't understand why you're breaking up with them, even though you've tried to say why it might be coming here for months.
Right.
But I needed a place to vent, and I was in my last year of law school, and mind you, I was a little bit shaken up, and I found out there was a small comedy scene in New Orleans, and brought together a bunch of law school classmates. I took them to, I think it's called Carrollton Station in New Orleans. And I actually watched that tape recently just to see. And that's hard. I don't like watching myself do anything.
Right.
And
how much time did you do?
I did 7 minutes.
All right. That was your first time on stage?
First time on stage.
And what did you talk about?
Well, like all comedians who are first trying to figure things out, you know, I make at least one or two sex jokes because that's what you do when you don't know what to do. I think my first joke was I'm losing my comedy virginity in front of all of you. And if it's like my last virginity I lost, it's going to be awkward, uncomfortable, and over in 3 minutes. And, you know, easy. That's just what you do. But then, yeah. then I pivoted into some other things, you know, like open container laws in New Orleans and how Bill O'Reilly masturbates to the Constitution every time he goes on until he gets mad and reads all those lame socialist stuff, like about the general welfare and that we get equal protection under the law. You know, stuff that law students in the audience helped for me to do.
Okay. So someone helped you write the material?
No, I mean, okay. It's helpful that they get what I'm talking
okay.
about.
Okay. And how'd that go?
Actually, pretty well. From what I heard, there was laughter, and I was a little bit married to my script, which okay. was a big weakness of comedy starting. And I still do that occasionally, where I learned if I have something written down, I'm going to look at it, and it's not going to be as good. So I've tried to pivot to where I just have topics I've written down, like just the topic, and I'll just go on that rather than writing out the whole script.
Mm-hmm. And that's worked good for you?
It's worked pretty well for me. I was actually amazed watching my first time how it hasn't changed that much substantively. I've just honed it a little bit better, and that's okay. really all you can hope for.
And how quickly did you get on stage again after that first time?
Actually, I think I got on stage like 2 or 3 days later. I went to another open mic that is escaping me right now. I think it's called The Howlin' Wolf.
And how long ago was this?
This was February 1st, 2012. That was the first time I went on stage.
Okay, so almost 3 years now.
Yeah, almost 3 years. The only break I've taken for comedy was the 4 months I spent studying for the bar exam.
Okay. Didn't think comedy was good at that time?
I was living with my Uncle Neil, and he's a lawyer, and my aunt's a lawyer, and whenever I wanted to do anything, they were my taskmasters, so to speak. You know, I was like, oh, I'm looking to go to a party, and my uncle, very commanding, you know, Brooklyn Jewish man, like, John, you can spend your whole life going to parties, but right now you study for the bar exam, and that's my bad impression of him. But it was true. He was right. There were parties that came afterwards, and I'm glad I buckled down, because it's about a 50% pass-fail rate for the bar exam, and you wait 4.5 months.
And you did it here or in New Orleans?
Oh, no, this was California. I took the California. I did not. It's too hot. Too hot to stay in New Orleans.
What school did you go to?
Tulane.
All right. So you knew you were going to leave. Why did you choose to go to that school?
Well, best school that offered me the most money to go there. And because New Orleans is just fantastic. Have you been there?
I've been there a few times.
Oh, it's magnificent. I'm amazed I'm not obese. The food and the drink. Ah, and you haven't lived till you've had a drive-through daiquiri bar experience.
What is that?
Well,
You can get daiquiris in a drive-thru.
It is exactly like it sounds. You can get daiquiris in a drive-thru because drinking and driving laws are sort of not really enforced down there. But as long as you get a straw cap on top, it's not technically drinking and driving.
Why is that?
If I knew, I wouldn't be making jokes about it.
Okay, so that's really a thing.
That's really a thing. Every time people would visit me, I would show them it. I would take pictures of them holding daiquiris. And these are not light daiquiris. This is like rum 151 daiquiris that will cause damage on the road if you are actually drinking it.
Right.
I remember my family came to town and I passed around some, and I think they thought they were smoothies, and they were not. And it made the evening much more festive.
Yeah.
And it was nice. It was good. None of them were driving, so I made sure everyone got home safe.
That's good. So you went from New Orleans back to the Bay Area?
Yeah, I did New Orleans back to the Bay Area. I studied for the bar exam. I looked for work. I was lucky to be related to a lawyer who gave me a job, but he likes to tell me that was not it. He thought I would be a good lawyer, so he did end up hiring me, and I had a wonderful experience there. And
was this your first time coming to San Diego?
Oh, no. I've been here off and on for the last 20 years, I'd say. My brother David moved down here, I think, I'd like to say maybe 2000 or so. So my 20 years is off there. But we spent a lot of family trips down here, going down to Baja back when we were less afraid of being murdered, you know, Mexico stuff.
That's good. So how was your, where did you move to when you came out here?
Well, first I moved to my brother's guest room. And then after I made enough money to not do that, I moved to North Park. And now I live in Mission Valley.
Okay. What's, you like living in Mission Valley?
Well, you don't really like living there. It's just convenient. It's like in the center of everything. It's next to all the malls and movie theaters and stores and stuff. You know, and it's less expensive than North Park. Although I miss that place. I like being able to walk to things. And I'm across the street from a 24-hour burrito hut, so I don't need anything else.
What? You big into burritos?
I'm big into food. I'm kind of a fat ass trapped in a skinny body, and I'm kind of a garbage disposal of things, you know. I like dating, if only because I can eat half their meal, too. So,
do you normally do that?
Well, less so. You know, modern women eat more. So, but, yeah, you know, if I'm with someone and they're going to leave half their plate, I was raised to not waste food. So, that's how I do.
Do you feel uncomfortable eating out in front of girls?
I don't know if I misheard you, but, no, I'm fine. I'm fine eating. I don't really have shame on certain things, which is a good and a bad thing. It helps me do comedy, but it makes me blissfully unaware when I have violated certain social norms around people, and it keeps.
There have been situations that's come to bite you in the ass?
I unintentionally offend a lot of people because I'm a little bit oblivious to the things I do. I remember one time I tried to compliment someone for how they were looking, and I was focused on the makeup, and somehow I accidentally said, "You look all painted up," which is an old-timey term for "you look like a prostitute." It was, you know, she laughed, and I was awkward, and that's a tame version. I would have to mine the catacombs of my mind to figure out all of the ways I've accidentally offended or ruined chances with women by simply talking. So I now just try a strategy of smiling, saying as little as possible. And actually, comedy. Comedy's been the greatest way for me to meet anyone down here.
Okay. How do you go about meeting women now?
Well, like I said, don't say as much as possible because pretty much anything I say will disqualify me. But actually, doing jokes has been the best way for me to meet people because I'm actually much more confident on stage than I am talking to women. I get a little awkward because, you know, we all have that 13-year-old who's hasn't grown out of his shell yet, who occasionally gets a little shy, but
you do online dating?
I did, and it's kind of crazy. I've met a lot of weirdos, and I'm kind of a weirdo, and it's weird for me to meet people who are more off than I am, like kind of sociopathic scary. Like somebody gave me a fake name when we first met, and then she felt okay to give me her real name the second time we met, and I did not call her the third time.
No, you didn't like that?
Well,
why did she fake her name?
Because men are terrible and will always hurt you. And she had to make sure that I wasn't one of those.
How can you hurt her just by knowing her name?
I don't know. I don't know how this works. The other weird one is I went on a date with someone that I learned was a virgin, which is fine, but it's not because she asked to come back to my apartment. And I didn't know that sometimes women just want to see where you live. Mm-hmm. So that was a humorous misunderstanding, but also really uncomfortable.
So you didn't take her virginity?
That is, I'm a gentleman. I would have to date her a few more times to do such a thing.
Was she interested?
No.
Okay.
But I don't see how that's relevant to this conversation.
I think it's interesting.
It is interesting.
You still don't have any water in that cup, you know?
Well, when I get nervous, I pretend to drink.
Okay. Well, enjoy the water. Hey, we're going to go to break. Listen to WSRadio.com. Whoa, I'm in a minute. Talk to Ben. Here, let's talk.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Third segment with Jordan Parker. So what was the first time you got on stage in San Diego?
Oh, first time I got on stage, I was actually at my old law office. My good friend Sarah, she's a legal assistant who basically runs the whole place. Her husband, Tyler, he's a comedian on the scene, and I'd learned that he does comedy, and he knew about shooters. So I you know, I started up a friendship with him. We went out and we just went to Shooters, this little dive bar in Spring Valley. And it was, I wouldn't say love at first sight, but I certainly became very fond of this place immediately. It has a sort of dimly lit charm.
Okay. Does Tyler still do comedy?
Yes, he does. Okay. Yes, he does. We go to the Comedy Palace quite often and Shooters, and he's fun. He's very fun to work with. I love his stuff. He's just woo, crazy. I like it. And he's also from Utah, so there's so much hilarity there.
Why is that?
Because it's Utah. Have you met the Mormons?
I have not. Is he Mormon?
He's an escaped Mormon.
Okay, so he only has one wife.
He does, a very loving, wonderful wife who I'm very proud to call my friend.
All right. So, I mean, what did you talk about the first time on Shooters?
What did I talk about the first time at Shooters?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Probably the usual bull crap about I live in my parents' basement, so I relate to all of your other comics here, you know, that kind of stuff. And probably political jokes that nobody got. That sounds like the kind of thing I would do.
How long ago was that?
Well, I moved here in August of 2012, so I think that would have been September or October 2012. That's when I met Dan Bublitz, Michael Castleberry, and all those other crazy characters.
Okay. Do you like those guys?
I do. Dan is a really upstanding guy. And
did you go to his wedding?
I did.
Okay. Were you sad that they got divorced?
I was.
All right. Did you see it coming?
I did not.
All right. Did you get him a gift?
I sure did. I probably donated something to them that I understand was supposed to go to a honeymoon, but I believe it went to bills, and I'm okay with that.
All right. So, you don't expect to get it back?
You know, money's just money.
How much money did you give him?
$100.
All right. That's not too bad.
No, it's not.
Did you think about giving more or less?
No, I think the suggested donation was maybe 20, 30, something like that. So right. I figured 100 was a decent thing. I think I one time gave a $15 gift card to I think it was Shirley's daughter, and Michael Castleberry decided this is time to make Jordan feel like an asshole for only giving $15 to this young girl. Like, dude, she should be happy. It's $50. Don't make me the asshole here.
Right. So what did he say?
Pretty much, what are you doing only giving $15, Mr. Fancy Lawyer Man? Don't you have more to give?
Ah, you didn't like that.
Well, I've learned that. I used to think that he was just a prick, but he's playing one on TV.
Okay.
And he's just always in character.
Yeah.
No, I like that guy. I like all those guys. They're very funny, and he gives me good insight on how to be a better comic. All of them do, and they're all just genuine good people. And that's rare because I've met a lot of asshole comics in my days. Not in San Diego, but
did you do any comedy in the Bay?
I just once.
Okay, and how'd that go?
Oh. It was at this place called Brainwash. It was a laundromat comedy coffee shop.
All right.
And people were lined up around the door to go in. And you had to get there really early in order to get on. And you get just 2 or 3 minutes to go. And it's just go. You're just so excited to get on stage, you kind of forget what you're doing.
Was there even a stage?
A tiny one in the corner. And then there are people ordering croissants, you know. 10 feet from you.
Right next to you?
Right next to you. It was sort of odd. But yeah. There's pinball next door. That's really, you know, put a pinball machine in front of me. I'm a happy guy.
All right. Is that a big thing? You think dates on pinball adventures, I guess would be the word.
The good ones, I would, yes. I recently discovered a San Diego pinball league that I participate in usually once a month, but work gets in the way. And I've met a lot of good people there too, and I realize I don't have to be 12 to be playing pinball with, and you know, go to Chuck E. Cheese or some shit. I spent a lot of time at a Coin-Op Game Room. That's a place that's got a whole bunch of machines, and they have tournaments each month.
Okay, are you a good player?
I'm pretty good. I haven't won yet, I can get, you know, second, third, or fourth, but there's usually a couple people who dominate far more than I do. And
is there prize money?
There usually is. I think it's really a pool of money, you know, either a gift card mixed with a gift card to CoinOp. Usually, $50 or $100. I wouldn't know. I've never won, but I do usually walk away with my entry fee and then some.
Okay. Well, that's not bad. So speaking of, do you do comedy contests?
Do I do comedy contests? I do not win comedy contests. I do not advance comedy contests, but I do submit myself to them.
All right.
Like the 2015 Comedy Festival, I submitted. That did not work out, but I didn't think it would. And I actually had scheduled a vacation that time. So in that sort of, well, I'm glad I didn't get it anyway, but secretly, why didn't I?
So you sent a video to get in the, like, local showcase or something?
Yeah, but
they already told you didn't get it?
Yes. Well, actually, they sent an email that said you didn't get it. And then they said, disregard last email. We messed up this email. So I'm still pretty sure it's no. That's why I was on the list to begin with. But well, of no, of, and it wasn't even a, it was both a, it wasn't an explicit, you didn't get it. It was, we would like you to come to our event. So obviously, if you want to go to the event and buy tickets, you are obviously not in the show.
All right.
But, you know, I sent them a clip that wasn't, you know, wasn't great. And I've gotten better, but I don't usually catch it on tape.
Okay. How often are you filming yourself?
I usually sound record myself. It's hard to get somebody to videotape me for 6 minutes, but I'd say every time I go up, I try to wear a shirt with a pocket in it, and I hit audio record and hear myself go and force myself to listen and see if I can improve a little bit.
So you listen to every set?
Yeah, I listen to every set. Usually not happily, because, you know, I'm my own worst critic, and it's still weird to hear myself talk, but I listen to it. Like, if I'm driving home, I'll plug it in, and I'll hear it, and I'll be excited at the jokes that are good and mad at the ones that are awkward and people don't get, or because I said them terribly and forgot my joke in the middle of it.
All right. What's your writing process?
Well, I pretty much just think about stuff that's funny, and if I have a joke, I'll write it down, or I'll write down a topic and get back to it. And on occasion, I'll get a tweet or a Facebook that posting that's really liked, and someone says that should be a joke, and then I'll put that down and into my little joke book, as in my phone.
Do you tweet a lot?
I do. I actually recently came out of the Twitter closet. I had an anonymous profile for a while just for funsies, and I decided to make it public. I used to use it because I have an incredible power to be an argumentative internet asshole, and I didn't want to be that anymore because people are crazy on the internet. They really think you have nothing better to do than to respond to them.
Mm.
And I didn't want to do that. That's really not fun. I have no interest in arguing with people who just get off on being an asshole on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, lawyerly, we live in the world of evidence and facts and things that make sense.
But it seems like you were doing that. Or were you trying to just disprove people?
Disprove and diffuse. I'm really one of those people who, like, you know, come on, guys, we don't have to do this. This is a little crazy, you know. I never really understood it, how people get so mad on the internet. Just, what? You think the government should do something slightly different than I think? Well, fuck you.
Right. So you're big into politics?
Yeah, I'd say so. Family's pretty politically well-read, and, I've been following politics pretty extensively since my uncle would give long screeds about it, but I really didn't become active, so to speak, until our recall election. Do you remember that? 2003, where we had the Terminator, a porn star, and Gary Coleman all on the ballot. And,
oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Bush-Al Gore recall.
Oh, no, recount.
Recount. Oh, okay.
Recount. This was the California recall election.
Okay, I wasn't out here for that. What happened with that?
Oh, well, you know, a Democrat was just reelected, and obviously that was stupid. So we had a recall election the very next year, and basically all you needed was $3,500 and I think like 50 signatures, and you could get on the ballot. So you had Arnold Schwarzenegger, you had Larry Flint, Gary Coleman, Mary Carey, porn star, Angeline, I think she's also a porn star, and I don't know, former commissioner of baseball, Peter Uberoth. I'm not a sports guy. I think that's who he is. So literally anyone who had nothing better to do was on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And eventually Arnold Schwarzenegger was winning, or ended up winning. And I was kind of at that moment where I wasn't a comedian yet, but I kind of felt politics was something like this really hilarious inside joke that I wasn't in on. And I found it really fascinating because it just seems like this really stupid game that is being played in front of us. And I like to be a part of it. And it's helpful because 10 years later, I'm trying to translate that into actual jokes. I mean, I really respect the Bill Maher's and the Jon Stewart's of the world who distill this bullshit and try to make it funny, but also informative. Mm-hmm. And John Oliver, too. I have to give him credit for really what he's done with political news comedy in a way that is really kind of harnessed viral video making, too.
Let's just take on Colbert.
He had a really fantastic run, and he did us a great service, and I wish him well in the next game.
You think he's going to do well on the late show?
I actually think he shouldn't be underestimated, because anybody who could keep that character alive and fresh for 9 years is not to be underestimated.
Well, we got one more segment. Wow. Listening, WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in internet talk. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Bye.
Talk to me. WSRadio.com.
Welcome to Comics Talk Comedy with your hosts, Jeffrey Bilodeau and Jesse Egan.
All right, we are back. Final segment with Jordan Parker. So with having like a pretty good job, is it tough to stay motivated to do comedy?
I actually would say having the job kind of makes you a little more motivated because I need a balance to it. I mean, I'm very kind of buttoned up when I go to work, and comedy is that contrast. It really lets you cut loose, and actually it makes me much more dynamic and interesting of a person. I mean, nobody I've ever told that I'm a lawyer is like, wow, that's so interesting. They're like, oh, that's nice. Why are you telling me that?
Mm.
The comedy thing really gets the conversation started and kind of humanizes you in a way, because lawyers have a certain well-earned bad reputation.
Right. So, I mean, what are your goals with comedy?
My goals for right now are just to keep moving it forward, get booked in more shows. Actually, I recently created a fan page. I publicized my Twitter account. I'm trying to really actually take it a little bit more seriously, which is weird to say taking comedy seriously, but I want to promote myself in a way that's different than just saying, hey, everyone, come to my show. And I send a text to a couple of people. I want to actually get people who aren't my friends to start coming out to see me.
Okay. I mean, how much time do you think you could do?
Like, time? I mean, I can talk forever. It's just whether or not I get it actually honed and good. I could see myself, I can do a 15-minute set pretty well. And I'd say if I put more time into it and actually put it all together, I could probably do half an hour, too. It's really just, I mean, so much of comedy is performance art. It's being able to memorize it and have it flow very well. Sometimes I've cheated and I've written on my hand, you know, a couple topics, and then I can, and then of course I can do my default Sarah Palin joke, you know, which I always have fun with. Like, I'm, look at me, I'm being like, pointing to my hand, I'm being like Sarah Palin, diving headfirst into something I'm horribly unqualified for. It's like, ha ha ha, it's political and relatable, so.
Right.
And, but the reality is, yes, I'm using my hand because I forgot what I'm doing.
Right. So that's standard, or you just do that sometimes?
I do that sometimes. I can't, you know, do the same joke every time.
Right. What's the longest you've ever done?
Longest I've ever done, I think it was New Orleans. I think it was Howlin' Wolf. I think I was up there for at least 14 or 15 minutes, and that was a lot of fun. You know, it was one of those little mics where not that many people went, and you could just keep going, and I had a lot of fun. I think it was hosted by a guy named Red Bean, you know, Red Beans and Rice. You know, it's New Orleans food.
Okay. Well, it must have been a pretty black culture at these shows, I'd imagine.
There's a lot of white people in New Orleans, surprisingly.
All right.
So, but there were some, but it certainly wasn't like a black room.
Mm. You ever dated a black girl?
I have.
How did you like that?
Oh, how do I? It was good. I mean, I like dating people. It sounds like that liberal, everyone's alike, but no, it's just people are people. I don't know, I didn't see anything quirky or crazy that, like, I could report on that. I mean, it's with my family, that's never really been a thing, you know. I'm glad that I don't have to have those conversations of the groups I'm not allowed to date.
Okay.
I mean, we're Jews, so we're used to sigma. So
you're looking to marry a Jew?
I've never even dated a Jew.
Oh, really?
We're small in numbers, and it's hard to meet them. Usually, the way I started going to Jewish events down here, and the way it always works at every Jewish event is there's going to be, and I love the Jewish people and my people, but there's always like one or two gorgeous Jewish girls that every single guy is fawning over.
Did you do the Jewish event at the Comedy Store?
Yes, you saw me there.
Yeah.
That was awkward for me. But that was fun, wasn't that? There, you remember that drunk girl in the front row who was being loud and crazy?
Rachel Chacha.
Rachel Chacha, that's her, oh God, that's her action. That's what she actually calls herself.
Yeah.
God, that's, oh, but that gave me some good comedy material. Put a bunch of awkward people together in one room and see what happens. And Jews, my people, love them. We are of particular awkwardness. That's why I think we shine with comedy.
Did you get any dates from that?
I made friends. I did not get dates.
No. With guys or girls?
No, girls. You know, we made friends, and when it, you know, doesn't work out, it's just nice to have Jewish friends. It's nice to know Jewish people.
You got a church or whatever it's called?
Temple.
Temple?
No, I celebrate the high holidays, and, you know, I fast for Yom Kippur.
How long is that?
That's a day. With Catholics, it's 40 days of, you know, penance. With Jews, we've compressed it all into one day just for convenience.
Okay. So you celebrate Hanukkah?
I do, yes. I got my niece and nephew a couple nice things. You know, I have fun with that. I actually went shopping for my nephew on thinkgeek.com, and I ended up buying myself a bunch of presents too.
All right.
Which is nice. And actually one present I bought for me didn't like and just threw it into his thing, and he loved it. So it's nice.
What was that?
It was a tie that was in a 8-bit form, you know, like an 8-bit video game, and it turned out to be a clip-on and did not look like I thought it would. And I figured, you know what? He would like this. I'm already giving him a tactical attack necktie, so let's just put two ties. And he likes to play dress-up because he's a fancy gentleman.
How old is he?
He's 11.
All right, but he's a gentleman.
He is a gentleman and a scholar with a top hat and all kinds of things.
Okay. So you wear that hat thing?
Do I wear that hat? He wears that hat. I don't have a top hat yet. I have a fedora and a pork pie hat and a leprechaun hat and a fez. I have a whole series of hats.
You're a big hat guy?
I do have some hats that I wear in public. I'd say I have a lot of silly hats. The couple fashionable hats, I guess my pork pie hat or fedora have been a little trademarky. People don't recognize me when I'm not wearing a hat doing comedy.
Yeah.
But my mom says, show your face. I'm like, all right, fine.
So have your parents seen you do comedy?
Yes, they have.
And what do they think of it?
My dad loves it, mainly because he's about 40% of my stand-up act.
Okay. Just ripping on your dad?
Ripping is such a accurate way of putting it. But yes, but he opens himself up to it, and he's just clapping and loving and like, he's talking about me.
All right. Well, we're coming up to the end. This is the standard couple of questions I ask. What's the worst show you've ever had?
Oh, what's the worst show I ever had? I hate to say this because of where you come from, but I'd have to say it was probably at Winston's. And at this one, I was in the middle of a set that I thought was going halfway okay, and then somebody gets a cell phone call in the middle of the show and starts talking.
I remember this show.
Very loudly. And she's looking at me as if I'm the asshole for pointing out that this is incredibly rude. And she says, I need someone to come to my show. How else can I give her directions? And I mean, how could you possibly, if there's some way you could type words into your phone and silently do that? And it was just so frustrating because people don't realize how that really throws you off. Just, you have a plan and they ruin it.
Right. That was the worst show. That's good. What was your best show?
My best show, I'd have to say, I did a first show with Dat Van and Friends in July, and I actually had a first show on Friday, which wasn't as good because I drank a little bit of whiskey to take the edge off. Then I drank too much, and I forgot my set 7 minutes in, but I just recovered. And then the Saturday afterwards, I had a really good set. I had all my friends and a bunch of family come out. It was actually recorded, which is nice when you actually record yourself doing a good set.
Mm-hmm.
And I was comfortable. I had fun, and I had good playback with the audience, you know, and it was a really good set.
And where was that?
That was, we'd rented out a community center up in Point Loma. I can't remember what it's called, community theater.
Okay.
And it sat about 150 people, and it was just such a fun show, and I met a lot of people there, and my friends and family and coworkers actually got to see this other side of things I do, and it was really refreshing. It was the first time I actually felt like a comic. I also got paid for it, which is the first time I ever got paid for a show. Which is
how much you get paid?
Oh, I can't remember. I got 20% of all the tickets I was selling. So, and I did two shows. I think it was like 130 bucks based on all the tickets I had sold.
That's pretty good.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad.
So where can people catch you next?
Well, you can catch me at Dat Van Friends on Saturday, January 10th at 5 p.m. At the Dragon's Den. It's a sushi bar across the street from Petco Park.
All right.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's $10, and you should definitely consider looking
at
it.
What's your Twitter or your Facebook?
Well, my Facebook, my name is Jordan Parker. You can look me up on my fan page, and I just made a public Twitter account. It's a stand-up lawyer with an underscore after up.
All right. Well, that's it. Jordan Parker, WSRadio.com, World Radio, not talking about it.